Can you say that all the elect will surely be saved?
Where does it say that?
Doesn't, I'm asking.
Oh, no, no. All we're doing now, Jeff, is looking at the statements. He's anxious to get ahead. 175 to 183. I'm just asking if there are questions or comments or observations on these statements, because it's such a big section, this quotation section. Right.
I don't know if anyone else felt the same way. I feel kind of stupid reading this out, but I'm not sure that I fully understood on the page.
What
was you wanted to go from 1 to what? 1 to 76? 183. Bart. Could you put Moffat into your historical perspective for us a little bit?
I don't know much about him personally. Connected with the Plymouth Brethren, but I don't know much about him other than that. I have his little booklet, but you notice his booklet is published by Luazzo, which is the publishing house for dispensational material, was for a number of years. But other than that, I
in connection with that, on page 180,
yes.
I'm trying to reduce all of this stuff, they're about two-thirds of the way down.
Right.
Separated paragraph that starts off, no care.
Yes, got it.
Is that your summation?
This whole thing is the quotation.
This is all part of the quotation?
Yes.
That his writing.
His writing. Okay, so, yeah. I don't think I've commented on any of these except with Edgar Young Mullins, where page 179, halfway down, I put in a little note. And I tried to make it clear that it's my note because it mentions E.Y. Mullins in the third person. But other than that, I haven't put in my own comments.
Okay. I just found that kind of interesting. So you're saying that he is from somewhat of a dispensational
definitely
perspective.
Yeah.
And here in that note here at the end of it, but rather makes an emphasis that I'm seeing with his understanding of election here, he's arguing that for a view here where man becomes ultimately responsible
mm-hmm.
to present salvation by
yes.
the Sanskrit.
Yes.
But rather makes them all equal in possibility, imposing upon them full responsibility for their own safety.
Right.
Is this a unique perspective that he offers in terms of?
I don't think so. I think it's just stated more clearly than it is in a number of writers. And that's why I included it. It's stated very forthrightly and very straightforwardly, I must say. Other questions on any of these readings? I also tried to give a variety of viewpoints, a spectrum. I mean, even a section from Jerome Zanchius in his work Absolute Predestination, which is pretty strong. I mean, you could run the gamut from Moffat to Zanchius. Okay, let's move on then, since everybody's anxious to move on anyway. Page 184, Development of the Doctrine. First of all, some clarifications. Notice this word foreordination, which we've discussed before. Question 7 of the Westminster Shorter Catechism. The decrees of God are his eternal purpose according to the counsel of his will, whereby, for his own glory, he hath foreordained whatsoever comes to pass. Foreordained. Foreordination refers to God's decrees concerning all things. He has foreordained. He has included the things he causes. He has included the things he chooses to permit. But predestination has to do with that aspect of foreordination that pertains to salvation. So God foreordains all things in this development, And then what all things refer to salvation, that's included under the umbrella of predestination. And that includes election and reprobation. And reprobation, in turn, is divided into preterition, passing by, literally passing by, preterition, and pre-condemnation. So this little outline, it may help to sort things out a little bit. Ordination, God's purposes, respects all events. Predestination, God's purposes, respects salvation. And that includes election, reprobation, which includes preterition and pre-condemnation. Okay? Now, the terms I know are confusing because predestination is sometimes used very broadly and sometimes very narrowly. Sometimes in the coinage of the term, historically, predestination is interchanged with election and doesn't include reprobation. And in some schemes, reprobation doesn't even appear. Not preterition, but and not pre-condemnation, just condemnation. Okay? So in some of the schemes, you will have God's plan, and then you will have predestination and condemnation. Very simple. But it's a little confusing because predestination is used in a couple different ways. So it's helpful to sort these out and keep the words straight, at least in this scheme. Now, election. Notice a couple of statements. Louis Berkhof, Abraham Booth. And then immediately we plunge into the scriptures, and I've included the terms, that is, the Greek terms in these scriptures, which appear in question number 2, that is, 3 of the 4 passages. We've already looked at Romans 12, 11, Romans 5, 12 through 19. And the first of these passages of the 3 that appear in review question number 2 is Romans 8, 28 to 30. And we are knowing that for those who are loving God, very wooden translation, for those who are called according to his purpose, all things are working together for good. For whom he foreknew, he also predetermined to share the likeness of the image of his Son, in order that he may be the firstborn among many brothers. And whom he predetermined, these he also called, and whom he called, these he also justified, and whom he justified, these he also glorified. It's very interesting the way it sets up. You notice that verse 29, which begins, "For whom he foreknew," whom he foreknew, he predetermined to share the likeness of the image of his Son. So you start whom he foreknew at the beginning, and you end with sharing the likeness of his Son. So then in verse 30, whom he predetermined, that is, to share the likeness of his Son, predetermined, these he called, whom he called, these he justified, whom he justified, these he glorified. So you've got foreknew, you've got predetermined or predestinated, you've got called, justified, and glorified, those five ideas. Okay, you've got those five ideas. Foreknew, predetermined, called, justified, glorified. So on page 185, I've put those into symbols and made up some diagrams here with circles representing classes of human beings. And so when you have a circle with F in it, It represents all those human beings whom he foreknew, or P or C or J or G. And then I've made two assumptions about infants and severely retarded persons incapable of grasping the rational content of saving faith. That is, for example, you might say Christ's incarnation, his atonement, and his resurrection. Okay. These are not in view in Paul's line of thought. That is, the idea of calling, if it refers at all, if it includes at all the call of the gospel, would present a problem for both infants and really severely retarded persons. Even though sometimes it's hard to draw the line and know just how much severely retarded persons are understanding, how much they're grasping. But we understand that's a pragmatic problem. All right. And the second assumption is that the efficacious call, now what does that mean? The efficacious call, as distinguished from the gospel call, refers to a call of the Holy Spirit by which he efficiently brings people to faith in Christ, the efficacious call. The call of the gospel is a call which may be extended indiscriminately, and we do extend it indiscriminately to all to whom we proclaim Christ. But the efficacious call is a call in which the Holy Spirit draws people efficiently to saving faith in Jesus Christ. It actually secures the response of a sinner so that the sinner trusts in Jesus Christ. The efficacious call. It assumes as logically prior the outward call of the gospel. I've made those two assumptions. So in other words, number two means first you have the call of the gospel, the outward proclamation, and then you have the inner call of the Spirit. Not apart from, but through the Word. That is, making the Word efficacious in the life of the individual. Savingly drawing him and uniting him to Jesus Christ. So there are the two assumptions in this, and you got to keep the assumptions in mind in these scenarios. That is, to properly understand these diagrams. And then I've listed a number of diagrams, seven in number, trying to figure how best to put together these five terms as far as classes of people. And then there's another term that's distinguished, foreknowledge. And that term is distinguished into two different meanings. One is a knowledge, a cognitive knowledge, simply of facts. In this case, a particular fact, a person's favorable response to the gospel. So, foreknowledge may be prior cognitive knowledge of a person's favorable response to the gospel, as in diagram number two, where it understands foreknowledge in that way. Or it may be foreknowledge, as in diagram one, foreknowledge as prior knowledge of fellowship. Now this builds on, and we'll come to that, this builds on two meanings of yadah, the Old Testament word, two meanings of oida and ginosko, the New Testament words most commonly translated to know, and those words have two basic ideas. One is a knowledge of facts, factual knowledge, cognitive knowledge. The other is a knowledge of relationship, a knowledge of personal relationship, a knowledge sometimes called a fellowship. And here I've used that term, knowledge of fellowship. personal knowledge of relationship. Now, there's a section we're coming to in which it scouts out those meanings of know and foreknow, and we'll look at those. But for the time being, you understand there are two meanings of foreknowledge here. One is a prior knowledge of fellowship or relationship. The other is a prior knowledge of a fact. In other words, the person's favorable response to the gospel. And I've tried to identify in each case which which meaning of foreknowledge is being used. Okay? The first one, diagram one. Foreknowledge is prior knowledge of fellowship, calling as the efficacious call. Now you see in assumption number two, there are already two meanings for call, the outward call of the gospel and the efficacious call. And now we have two meanings of foreknowledge. And we've made an assumption that infants and severely retarded persons are not included in the diagrams. So we can put those to the side and just consider these two senses of calling and two senses of foreknowledge. And keep those in suspension as we go through. What I suggest in the first diagram is that all five classes of human beings are coextensive. That is, understanding Romans 8, 29, and 30 as having the class of those whom he foreknew be the same class as those whom he predestined, the same persons. Coextensive. It includes the same people. Whom he foreknew, them he called. Going back to the translation at the bottom of 184, whom he foreknew, he also predetermined. Whom he predetermined, he also called. Whom he called, he also justified. Whom he justified, he also glorified. So you have in diagram one, those whom he foreknew, includes the same persons as those whom he predestined, those whom he called, those whom he justified, those whom he glorified. So it's taking it as, in each case, the class as being coextensive with the class preceding. Okay? So that's pretty straightforward. I see no problems in this, no internal problems logically. Diagram two. This understands foreknowledge as prior cognitive knowledge of a person's favorable response to the gospel. So, whom he foreknew would favorably respond to the gospel, them he also predestined. And whom he predestined, he also called. Whom he called, he also justified. Whom he justified, this, he also glorified. Now, I point out two problems here. Knowledge of a person's favorable response to the gospel must be implied in the text. See, in other words, you have to read it not whom he foreknew, but you either have to read what he foreknew about certain individual in terms of response to the gospel, or you have to read it whom he foreknew and then put in a parenthesis would make a favorable response to the gospel. Whom he foreknew. The other problem I see is, if predestination, top of 186, is conditioned on foreseen favorable human response to the gospel, then how can the call be efficacious? That is not conditioned on favorable human response, but actually securing it. Now, how is the call efficacious in diagram number two? Well, it says, whom he called, he justified. Same people. And if the calling is Notice in number two, if the call is efficacious, not conditioned on favorable human response, but actually securing it, it secures the response of the individuals. Then how can that be put together with predestination being conditioned on a favorable human response to the gospel? If it's efficacious, then it can't be conditioned on favorable human response. So you've got an internal problem there. Right.
Does it have to be those logical priority of the outward call? Does the efficacious call assume to logically, has logically acquired the outward call?
Assumption two. Yes. It assumes that the preaching of the gospel has preceded the inward call of the Spirit. Diagram number three takes foreknowledge as prior knowledge of fellowship, as does diagram number one. Takes the calling as the outward call of the gospel. And it says, whom he foreknew, he also predestined. Same class. But then, whom he predestined, he called. But this says, he called more than he predestined. In diagram three. He called more whom than he predestined. And that falls in the line with calling as the outward call of the gospel. He called more. Sure, the gospel was preached to more people than were predestined. And whom he called, he justified. But now here, you've got the outward call of the gospel being coextensive with those whom he justified. So in other words, everybody whom he called by the gospel is justified. In other words, nobody rejects the gospel in this view. Everybody's justified through the preaching of the gospel. And then everybody who's justified is glorified. Well, you can see there are some problems with this one. Diagram number four. It understands foreknowledge as prior cognitive knowledge of a person's favorable response to the gospel. It understands calling as the outward call of the gospel. So whom he foreknew, he predestined. That is, he predestined. Now, notice foreknowledge is knowledge of cognition. God knows who's going to favorably respond to the gospel, who's going to accept the gospel. And predestination then is based on or conditioned upon this response. You say, well, that works. No problem there. That's true. No problem there. But then you come to those whom he predestined, that is, on the basis of favorable response to the gospel and foreknowledge of it, he called. But this says more are called than are predestined. You say, well, that works too, because some of the people who are called by the gospel, the preaching, reject it. They reject it. Calling is the outward call of the gospel. But then whom he called, he also justified. That means everybody who's outwardly called by the gospel, including those who reject it, is justified. That doesn't work. Everybody who's outwardly called by the gospel, including those who reject it, is justified. No, that won't work. All right. Diagram five. It understands foreknowledge as prior cognitive knowledge of a person's favorable response to the gospel and calling as the outward call of the gospel. Same thing as in number four. Except the diagram's drawn a little differently. Whom he foreknew, that is, would accept the gospel, he predestined. But in this view, he predestines more. He predestines more people than those whom he foreknows will accept the gospel. And then it says, whom he predestined, he called, but he called more people than he predestined. Now, he predestined those, since it's favorable response to the gospel, it's a conditional predestination, but more are called than he predestined. You say, well, that's all right, too, because it's the outward call of the gospel. More people are called than are predestined, because some of those who are called reject the gospel. So that's all right. But then it says, whom he called, he also justified. Same people. Well, you have the same problem. If some reject the gospel and are justified anyway, well. Number six, it understands foreknowledge as prior cognitive knowledge of a person's favorable response to the gospel and calling as the outward call of the gospel. Whom he foreknew would accept Christ, he predestined. But he predestines more than he foreknew would accept Christ. And whom he predestined, he called. Well, that's okay because he calls by the calling of the gospel, the outward call, and he calls more than he predestines because some reject the gospel. And whom he called, he justified. Well, in this case, wait a minute, there are more people justified than are called by the gospel. And there are more people who are justified than are predestined. And then whom he justified, he also glorified. Well, this is an interesting situation because some people are justified who don't hear the gospel, and some people are predestinated in spite of their rejection of the gospel. Well, anyway. Diagram 7. It understands foreknowledge as prior cognitive knowledge of a person's favorable response to the gospel and calling as the outward call of the gospel. Whom he foreknew would accept the gospel, he predestined. But he predestined more. Whom he predestined, he called. Well, that's all right, because a lot of people hear the gospel and they reject it. Whom he called, he justified. But here, more are justified than are called. And all those who reject the gospel are justified as well. And whom he justified are glorified, but more people are glorified than are justified. Well, you can see this heaps up and heaps up problems, this particular view. Well, seems to me, aside from applying Occam's razor, it seems to me that diagram one appears to capture, or diagram two appears to capture at least the way the verses are set up, verses 29 and 30, grammatically. At least grammatically. And diagram two must imply that when it says, whom he foreknew, you have to add in parenthesis, whom he foreknew would make a favorable response to the gospel. And also in diagram number two, you have a problem between the call being efficacious, which diagram two says, the calling is efficacious calling, and on the other hand, predestination being conditioned on a foreseen favorable human response to the gospel. So you've got a problem between those two ideas. Seems to me that the one that fits the grammatical structure and the one that does not have internal problems as between these various categories is number one. Now, you may not like one. I mean, you may say, I don't like two through seven, but I don't like one either. You know, well, all right. Then we might think of another set of circles or another diagram and test it to see whether or not it both captures the grammar, the exegesis of the text, and also is relieved of these internal problems. Because I'm mainly dealing with internal problems here. Not exclusively, but mainly. Questions, comments? Right.
I'm wondering what is meant by foreknowledge. Because I think that out of all of the
That's correct. Absolutely right.
So I'm wondering if there's another way of looking at foreknowledge, and if we seek to see, if we look for one, how do we put what we find in the idea of time in relation to knowledge?
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a problem with the Arminian idea that says God foresees and foreknows, whether cognitively or otherwise,
right,
this person.
Yes.
Because I don't know that I can find a biblical basis for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is an essential part of the Arminian view, as you saw in Thiessen, as you would see in any of the writers from Wesley down through through Miley. So I don't know that we can relieve Arminianism of that tenet. Yeah.
In the problem under the second diagram, knowledge of a person's favorable response to the gospel must be implied in the text. Is it possible that something else is implied or assumed in foreknowledge that's used, for example, in Romans 8:28-30? Because the context seems to be indicating that nothing can separate us from the love of God.
Yes.
So it seems that when they received this letter, they might have been going through persecutions of different kinds. And they would say, wow, you know, does he still love us? Does he still care?
Mm-hmm.
Paul says, yes, he does care. Nothing can separate you from God. And then he talks about those who are loving God are called to soul. There's something else going on there. Is faith on the part of these people toward God assumed? And from that context, these words come forth.
Yes, I think so. Another way you could understand this, although later on in the notes we're going to take a look, a concrete and rather a more comprehensive look at the uses of know in Scripture. One way you could understand this, in the third line, at the bottom of page 184, whom he foreknew, you could understand that to mean simply whom he knew before whatever events took place here in the current context. In other words, prior to whatever events you're envisioning, whom he knew before, giving assurance that he has done something in terms of determination which ensures the end of that chain. You could do that. Of course, that depends somewhat on the prognosko and how it's used, and we're going to look at that. Yeah. So maybe you could hold that one and see when we look at foreknowledge and its uses as to how that works. Other comments, questions on Romans 8:28-30. It's a very important passage, but I have not often seen an analysis done on the passage using these diagrams that would explore the internal problems that sometimes arise when people just give an interpretation but don't analyze the interpretation to see how it actually spells out in the text. Well, Romans 9. Should we take a break? Let's take a break now, for just for once before 8 o'clock. And let's hold it to 10 minutes. Shall we? Does it feel warm in here? Kind of nice. Thank you. May I mention something? If any of you are behind in quizzes, the quizzes are now available at the library desk. So you can get one and take it quickly if you wish. Where was this?
In the Nyack College.
Yes.
Talked about foreknowledge. The not emphasizing so much God knowing something beforehand, but God's speaking of God.
Excuse me, don't lose your thought. Chris, all the envelopes with the quizzes and tests are now up in the library office. And in if you stand at the desk, there's a desk over to your left, set back just a little way. And the attendant, if the attendant isn't there at the time, out doing something, in the right hand top drawer, the envelopes are right there. You just find the one with your name on it.
Okay.
Good. Excuse me.
The teacher talked about emphasizing foreknowledge being God placing his love upon someone,
mm-hmm.
not so much seeing the future or the Arminians. And as far as that goes, I kind of lean toward that more than I do the Arminian do.
Who was your teacher?
Mr. Nielsen.
Nielsen.
Nielsen, he graduated from Westminster.
Okay.
And I kind of, I mean, I haven't studied it extensively to really know for certain if that's where I want to go, but at this point, that's where I kind of lean toward. But in the light of these other things, the Calvinistic scheme, John Calvin and so forth, I have a problem. I'm wondering if there's something else going on in this change that is not speaking so much about, say, Ray Acker. Okay, Ray Acker was, what's the... That Ray Acker is foreknown personally before the world was created, that he's predetermined. So on, and then those who call justified. If it's more of a principle or something that's not as concrete as that, I don't quite know how to put it in words what I'm thinking. In some ways, I lean on the Arminian arguments, and in some ways, I lean on the Calvinistic arguments, but I'm not satisfied with either.
Yes.
For example, I'm not satisfied with their foreknowledge.
Yes.
And yet, this being an unbroken chain in the sense that it refers to a specific individual, I'm wondering if there's another way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I'm going through struggles and suffering. Paul writes this letter, and he says, hey, you don't have to worry, because you've been foreknown, you've been predetermined to be conformed to the image of his son, and those whom, so on. If that's not given, even in the Calvinistic scheme, obviously there would be a practical reason for Paul saying these things. So that's not an argument against it. But I wonder if there's something else going on. I can't think of the words I'm trying to, that are in my, the concepts that are in my head.
Ray, when you were saying foreknowledge, with example you gave, would you mean that God foreknows like for the past 20 years of the
Yeah, yeah, not that. Foreknows, but God has determined before the foundation of the world that he is going to place his love on a certain kind of individual.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the individual of faith. And that's why that's the key I asked about. So that's why I asked before if faith isn't assumed. And from that vantage point, these Romans, they've got their faith in God and their suffering. Paul says those whom he foreknew, that is, placed his love upon, he predestined that these people would be conformed to the image of his son. So God has determined before the foundation of the world that those whom have faith in him, he will love.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is just in the one context. I don't want to contradict the context of Romans 9 where Paul says, before they had done good or evil. It says that Jacob I loved and Esau I hated. I think that that's a little different context, and I don't want to mix it up with that. And I wonder if it's a more general teaching than a very specific kind of thing that would speak about one individual by name, carry him through this entire process.
Well, one thing, it's plural all the way through.
Yeah.
So I don't know that we have to imply from the text any individuality. You might wonder if in verse 28, for those who are loving God, whether that's a class of individuals, rather than simply a characteristic of a class, an unnamed or unknown class in the sense of specific knowledge.
I suppose that the Corinthians in the heard this letter read, and they said that we are knowing that those who are loving God, they would say, well, yes, we love God.
Yes, that's right.
And so they would apply it to themselves.
Yes, of course.
And then they would say, for those who love God are called.
Yes.
Well, that's us. We've been called. We responded to the outward call of the gospel. All things are working together for good. So in the light of my suffering, I can still realize that things are working for good. And then he backs up, I guess, those who before knew. I know, this is the first place he uses it. Those before knew them, which might...
See, the loving God, you could say, well, hey, where do those come?
Those who are loving God,
those who are called according to his purpose,
presumably the calling would come before the loving,
whether you took it as the external call of the gospel or the efficacious call. Okay, because we're talking about those who are loving God. So, I mean, if you took it as the call of the gospel, they were called to Christ, and now they're loving God. Okay, then it goes, for whom he foreknew, he predetermined to share the likeness of the image of his Son. Foreknew. You've got to decide whether you put that before here, but as you go into verses 29 and 30, I think you're almost forced to put it before here, because called is used in 28, and then called is used in 30. So that you probably are pushed to put foreknew here. The way it sets up grammatically, whom he foreknew, he predetermined to share the image, likeness, and that could be somewhere following here, or it could be somewhere down here, or it could be the whole thing, if you consider it progressive.
I was kind of taking that with glorification being...
Well, okay. If you take it as another way of saying this, then you say, holy predetermined, he comes back to that. He also called. And whom he called, he also justified. Soon that comes here. Justification is an act which takes place at conversion. And then the loving comes along. And whom he justified, then he also glorified. So, if you take it that way, foreknew, predestined, called, justified, loving, those who are loving God, glorified. This really doesn't change it, this component. But it seems that's the way 28 through 30 sets up, doesn't it?
It seems that way. They're loving God.
Let me get a drink of water, okay? That's correct. Absolutely right.
So I'm wondering if there's another way of looking at foreknowledge. And if we seek to see, if we look for one, how do we put what we find, the idea of time
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a problem with the Arminian idea that says God foresees and foreknows, whether cognitively or otherwise,
right,
this person.
Yes.
Because I don't know that I can find a biblical basis for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is an essential part of the Arminian view, as you saw in Thiessen, as you would see in any of the writers from Wesley down through through Miley. So I don't know that we can relieve Arminianism of that tenet. Yeah.
You know, the problem under the second diagram. Knowledge of a person's favorable response to the gospel must be implied in the text. Is it possible that something else is implied or assumed in foreknowledge as used, for example, in Romans 8:28-30? Because the context seems to be indicating that nothing can separate us from the love of God.
Yes.
So it seems that when they received this letter, they might have been going through persecutions of different kinds. And they would say, wow, you know, this is, God still, does he still love us? Does he still care?
Mm-hmm.
Paul says, yes, he does care. There's nothing can separate you from God. And then he talks about those who are loving God are called and so on. There's something else going on there. It's faith on the part of these people toward God assumed. And from that context, these words come forth.
Yes, I think so. Another way you could understand this, although later on in the notes we're going to take a look, a concrete and a more comprehensive look at the uses of no in Scripture. One way you could understand this, in the third line, the bottom of page 184, whom he foreknew, you could understand that to mean simply, whom he knew before whatever events took place here in the current context. In other words, prior to whatever events you're envisioning, whom he knew before, giving assurance that he has done something in terms of determination which ensures the end of that chain. You could do that. Of course, that depends somewhat on prognosko and how it's used, and we're going to look at that. Yeah. So maybe you could hold that one and see when we look at foreknowledge and its uses as to how that works. Other comments, questions on Romans 8:28-30. It's a very important passage, but I have not often seen an analysis done on the passage using these diagrams that would explore the internal problems that sometimes arise when people just give an interpretation but don't analyze the interpretation to see how it actually spells out in the text. Well, Romans 9. Should we take a break? Let's take a break now, for just for once before 8 o'clock. And let's hold it to 10 minutes. Shall we? Does it feel warm in here? Kind of nice. May I mention something? If any of you are behind in quizzes, the quizzes are now available at the library desk. So you can get one and take it quickly if you wish. Mm-hmm. Where was this?
Nyack College.
Yes.
Talked about foreknowledge. Not emphasizing so much God knowing something beforehand, but God speaking of God.
Excuse me, don't lose your thought. Chris, all the envelopes with the quizzes and tests are now up in the library office. And in, if you stand at the desk, there's a desk over to your left, set back just a little way. And the attendant, if the attendant isn't there at the time, out doing something, in the right hand top drawer, the envelopes are right there. You just find the name on it. Excuse me.
The teacher talked about emphasizing foreknowledge being God's placing his love upon someone, not so much seeing the future or the Armenians. And as far as that goes, I kind of lean toward that more than I do the Armenians.
Who was your teacher?
Mr. Nielsen.
Nielsen,
he graduated from Western Master.
Okay.
And I kind of, again, I haven't studied it extensively to really know for certain if that's where I want to go, but at this point, that's where I kind of lean toward. But in the light of these other things, the Calvinistic scheme, John Calvin and so forth, I have a problem. And I'm wondering if there's something else going on in this change that is not speaking so much about, say, Ray Acker. Okay, Ray Acker was, what's the... that Ray Acker is... foreknown personally before the world was created, that he's predetermined, so on, and then those who call justified. If it's more of a principle or something that's not as concrete as that, I don't quite know how to put it in words what I'm thinking. In some ways, I lean on the Arminian argument, and in some ways, I lean on the Calvinistic argument, but I'm not satisfied with either completely. For example, I'm not satisfied either with foreknowledge. And yet, this being an unbroken chain in the sense that it refers to a specific individual, I'm wondering if there's another way to look at it. For example, I'm going through struggles and suffering. Paul writes this letter, and he says, hey, you don't have to worry, because you've been foreknown, you've been predetermined to be conformed to the image of his son, and those whom, so on. If that's not given, even in the Calvinistic scheme, it would obviously be there would be a practical reason for Paul saying these things. So that's not an argument against it. But I wonder if there's something else going on. I can't think of the words I'm trying to, that are in my, the concepts that are in my head.
Right, when you were saying
foreknows, but God has determined before the foundation of the world that he is going to place his love on a certain kind of individual. And that is the individual of faith. And that's why I asked before if faith isn't assumed, and from that vantage point, these Romans, they've got their faith in God and their suffering. Paul says those whom he foreknew, that is, placed his love upon, he predestined that these people would be conformed to the image of his son. So God has determined before the foundation of the world that those whom have faith in him, he will love. Now this is just in the one context. I don't want to contradict the context of Romans 9, where Paul says, before they had done good or evil, it says that Jacob I loved and Esau I hated. I think that that's a little different context, and I don't want to mix it up with that. And I wonder if it's a more general teaching than a very specific kind of thing that would speak about one individual by name and carry him through this entire process.
Well, one thing, it's plural. all the way through.
Yeah.
So I don't know that we have to imply from the text any individuality. You might wonder if in verse 28, for those who are loving God, whether that's a class of individuals, a class of individuals, rather than simply a characteristic of a class, an unnamed or unknown class in the sense of specific knowledge.
I suppose that the Corinthians in a little bit, or that the Romans rather, heard this letter read, and they said that we are knowing that those who are loving God, they would say, well, yes, we love God.
Yes, that's right.
So they would apply it to themselves.
Yes, of course.
And then they would say, for those who love God are called,
yes.
Oh, that's us. We've been called and responded to the outward call of the gospel. All things are working together for good. So in the light of my suffering, I can still realize that things are working for good. And then he backs up, I guess, those who before knew. I don't know, is this is the first place he uses it.
Those who before
knew them, which might...
See, the loving God, you could say, well, hey, where do those come?
Those who are loving God.
Those who are called according to his purpose.
Presumably the calling would come before the loving,
whether you took it as the external call of the gospel or the efficacious call. Okay, because we're talking about those who are loving God. So, I mean, if you took it as the call of the gospel, they were called to Christ, and now they're loving God. Okay, then it goes, for whom he foreknew, he predetermined to share the likeness of the image of his Son. Foreknew. You've got to decide whether you put that before here, but as you go into verses 29 and 30, I think you're almost forced to put it before here, because called is used in 28, and then called is used in 30. So that you probably are pushed to put foreknew here. The way it sets up grammatically, whom he foreknew, he predetermined to share the image, likeness, and that could be somewhere following here, or it could be somewhere down here, or it could be the whole thing, if you consider it progressive.
I was kind of taking that with glorification being...
Well, okay. If you take it as another way of saying this, then you say, only predetermined, he comes back to that. He also called, and whom he called, he also justified. Soon that comes here. Justification is an act which takes place at conversion. Then the loving comes along. And whom he justified, then he also glorified. So, if you take it that way, foreknew, predestined, called, justified, loving, those who are loving God, glorified. This really doesn't change it, this component. It seems that's the way 28 through 30 sets up,
yeah.
Doesn't it?
Seems that.
I mean, it seems that way.
Yeah. They're loving God.
Let me get a drink of water, okay? Squeaking again?
No, still going.
Oh. Squeaking again?
No, still going.
Oh.